Tokyo Podcast episode number 35.
On today's show, I talk to TV personality Bobby Judo about what it takes to get on Japanese television and also listen for your chance to win a free dinner from Tony Roma's. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I'll be talking to YouTube creator Bobby Judo. And if you are a fan of Japanese food or cooking at all, I'm sure you're familiar with Bobby's channel, which he showcases his unique cooking talents. And what's particularly interesting about Bobby is that he parlayed his YouTube channel into an actual segment on Japanese television. And I know that for many foreigners coming to Japan, they have this idea that, you know, just by landing here and being a foreigner, and they'll end up on Japanese television or in Japanese movies. But the reality is it's a lot harder than that. And many of them don't end up anywhere near as famous as they would like to think. But Bobby has managed to parlay his YouTube success into a gig on Japanese television. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk to him about that procedure and what he went through to get his cooking show on Japanese TV. I'll also be talking to Jacqueline Ween, who runs the website tokyojinja.com, and which is all about the many antique markets that spring up around Tokyo every Sunday. Jacqueline Ween is an antiques dealer from New York who's been living in Japan for a number of years, and she has a very interesting website talking about the deals and unique items that she finds at these flea markets all over Tokyo. So I'm going to be talking to her and Bobby a little bit later on in the show. Before we get to today's guest, how would you like to win a free dinner from Tony Roma's? Tony Roma's is a rib, seafood, and steak restaurant that's currently celebrating their 40th anniversary, and they are offering a free dinner for two to listeners of Tokyo Podcast. And how you enter is you have to visit the Expat's Guide to Japan website, send them an email, and they will be entered into their contest. The website address for that is expatsguide.jp, and on their main page you will see the contest for Tony Roma's. Send an email to them and they will enter into the contest, and the application period runs from now until July 1st. After July 1st, the Expat's Guide will choose two winners and they will send you an email with coupons for Tony Roma's. So if you're interested in a free dinner, check out Expat's Guide to Japan, and their website is expatsguide.jp. Jacqueline Ween is an antique dealer, design historian, and author of the very popular blog TokyoJinja.com. She can usually be found scouring various antique markets here in Japan, searching for the perfect item to complement her client's home. She joins me today to talk about her hobby of searching Japanese antique stores and to give us an idea of what it's like. Hey Jacqueline, welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Hi Anthony, thank you so much.
Now, I read your article, I read about you on an article on CNNGo.com, which kind of highlighted your trips to these antique stores. Can you give us a quick background as to how you got started and your interest in the antique market?
Well, I've been a lifelong flea marketer, to be honest. Always loved a good thrift shop, always loved to find something old with history or a story. And before I moved to Tokyo 8 years ago, I had already turned that love into a business as an antiques dealer. When I found out my husband's job would bring us to Japan, I had remembered either hearing or reading somewhere that Japan had these great antique markets, often held on the grounds of historic shrines. And it was kind of the little carrot that helped me. I mean, I was always coming, but it helped me be excited about moving to Japan. The idea that there was going to be great things to discover.
Can you tell us about these antique markets? How often do they occur? Are they every weekend? How did you find out about these?
You know, I knew about a few in the neighborhood as I came, and I started researching them. They all really adhere to a very regular schedule. Certain markets are on a particular Sunday of the month, so they might be held the first and the third Sunday. There are some occasionally markets on Saturdays. Then there are some markets like the Kawagoe Shrine Sale that was in that article that are held on the 28th of the month, regardless of what day that falls on. It could fall on any day of the week.
And when you visit a market, typically what are you looking for?
What am I looking for? I'm looking for a really wide range of things, from fine porcelains, you know, Imari and Seto porcelains, to, you know, cute things like vintage Kokeshi dolls. I'm very interested as well in the non-Japanese items that spring up at the markets, or the early 20th century or late 19th century Meiji period, you know, when Japan was so busy rushing to modernize, their interpretation of Western styles and goods. So sometimes lamps, light fixtures. I'm interested even in the trends of what the Japanese dealers are buying in Europe and America and bringing to the markets for the Japanese. Because sometimes it's the Westerners buying the antique Japanese stuff, and the Japanese clientele are buying French linens from the Paris flea market. It's funny.
Interesting. And so, what advice would you give to someone who's listening to this, who maybe is interested in going to a market for the first time? How can they know the authenticity of some of these items?
I think the nice thing about flea marketing or shrine selling here in Japan is, like everything else in Japan, people are, for the most part, really honest, which, you know, again, you know, if you've had that flea market experience, let's say somewhere like China, you know, in China, my assumption is everything's fake. If you happen to bring home something that is authentic, wow, you got lucky. Here is very much the reverse. I think most dealers are giving you the most accurate knowledge they may have. That doesn't mean they don't, they're sometimes mistaken. Sometimes I'm aware of that, that they think that something is older than it is or that it's used for a different purpose. But I kind of like to say that 95% of the time, you know, it's very honest. And my golden rule is, you know, any antique is only really worth whatever the final person who buys it paid for it. There's not really always a set value. So if you love something and you think it's going to look right in your home, or it has a purpose for you, and the price you're comfortable with, and you've negotiated a little bit, I don't really think you can go wrong.
Can there be like treasures found at these kind of antique markets? You know, like those shows are very popular in America where people...
Antiques, you know, Roadshow.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, and you find something that your grandfather gave you and turns out it's worth like a lot more than you thought.
Well, let me tell you a quick story. Not that long ago, I was at one of my favorite shrine sales, very small, and I'd gone there to see a lady who sold a lot of paper goods, you know, like prints and things, but not actually particularly valuable ones. And the dealer next to her doesn't usually have very good stuff. And I walked up and there was a frosted lamp, and it was beautiful. It was very small. I immediately kind of wanted it for myself. Very French, 1930s. And I asked her how much it was. And it was one of those moments where I thought she said 50,000 yen. And, you know, the number just kind of shocked me a little. And I paused and I turned my head and looked at the prints I was looking at again. And as I'm doing that, in the back of my mind, I thought, it's Lalique. I know it's Lalique, and I know it's rare and valuable. And I turned back around and it was gone.
Wow.
Like in that 2 minutes, somebody else bought it. It was like the find that got away. I mourned that for a while. You know?
So if someone is, you mentioned that one of the big ones recently closed. If someone is coming to Japan or they live here and they want to, you know, start getting into the antiques market, which sale would you recommend?
Well, a couple places. I would recommend the Oedo market at the International Forum right at Yurakucho on the edge of Ginza, right by the Imperial Palace. That's not actually at a shrine. It's literally at that International Forum Convention Hall in the plaza. So it's very pleasant, easy to get to, both public transportation or driving or walking. It has very good dealers and needs to be a little more expensive. It's a nice, if you're here as a tourist, you have one day and you don't want to spend all your time plowing through junk, you want to maybe pick up some really good things, that's a great one. Hmm. Another one I really like, it's a little bit further afield, but you can take the subway there easily, is the one at Tomioka Hachiman, which is, it's a famous sumo shrine, a historic sumo shrine. And that one can vary in its quality, but that one has a little bit more of an old fashioned, you know, you never know what you might find, or it might be a little bit junky, but very interesting, very friendly dealers as well. Hmm. And then obviously Kawagoe, which is really the pinnacle. You know, it's always been my favorite, and that's the one that falls on the 28th of the month. It's about an hour outside of Tokyo, but again, has train lines that run there. The town is historic, an old historic castle town with historic stores on a street, and, you know, you can make a whole day out of that.
If someone was kind of new and a little bit perhaps nervous about getting into the market, or perhaps some company wanted to pick up a few items but they weren't sure, are you available for hire?
I try to limit how often I do it, but I will take a person who's really interested, someone who's come in from out of town on a planned tour, help them choose what to buy, how to negotiate, how to get it home, work with them beyond that if we can't find what they want that day. And the same thing, you know, if somebody knows there are a few things they want, I often have ongoing shopping relationships with people that way.
Tell me a little bit about your blog. I understand that you have been writing this for a while, and you've got some really great articles on the antiques market here. And you also have a schedule, is that correct, about the when the shows are and their locations around Japan?
Yes. So the blog is a traditional blog, but I do keep a separate tab called like a shrine sale antique show schedule. I try to keep that updated, and that you could use, you know, by regularly checking and looking and thinking, you know, oh, next Sunday I'd like to do something. What's on and what's available? The blog itself is full of articles teaching people about different items, showing how you might use them in your interior, and it's organized into categories. So if there's something specific you're interested in, you're particularly interested in art and not furniture, you're particularly interested in learning where you're interested in textiles, those categories are all listed on the side of the blog, and you can basically click them and get all the articles about that topic.
Great. And if people want to find out more information about the antique market here in Japan, they can visit your website at tokyojinja.com, and I will make sure to post a link from that from my website at tokyopodcast.com. Thanks, Jacqueline. Thanks for coming on the show and giving us an insight into the antique market here in Japan. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I did too.
Many foreigners come to Japan with dreams of becoming a celebrity. They believe in the outdated myth that once you arrive in Japan, you'll be offered all sorts of lucrative contracts just because you're a foreigner. However, upon arriving in Japan, reality kicks in. They soon realize that there is no shortage of wannabe actors living in Japan, and that an English teaching job isn't exactly the ticket to fame and riches like they thought it would be. My guest today is Bobby Judo, who appears on a number of Japanese television shows where he hosts his own cooking segment. And what's interesting about Bobby's story is how he got on Japanese TV. It's a fascinating story of hard work and dedication to a dream, and I'm pleased that he joins me today to talk about his life here in Japan. Hey, Bobby, welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Hey, thank you very much. It's really good to be here.
Now, your kind of start into this multimedia world came about through YouTube, is that correct?
Through YouTube and blogging, that's right. But I do just kind of want to emphasize that it's local. I'm not like a national TV celebrity. I live in Kyushu, and I'm based out of Saga-ken, and I work on a Saga TV station, and then the next prefecture over is Fukuoka, and I work for a couple of TV stations in Fukuoka as well.
Cool. Can you give a quick background to our viewers as to how you got to Japan and what brought you here?
Sure. I graduated college and spent some time living in New York trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And one of the things that I was always interested in from a young age was the idea of living in other countries and experiencing a different culture. But as an English major and someone whose work experience was mostly waiting tables, I didn't really have a lot of options for making money. And so when you look into living in other countries, as you mentioned earlier, the English teaching job is one of the first things that you can find. There are a lot of English teaching programs in foreign countries. And I think Japan is pretty well known for having the best English teaching program. They offer a good salary. They help you find a place to live. And so for someone who wanted to see what life was like in another country and who didn't have any money, that was the best way to go. So like a lot of the foreigners who arrived in Japan, I did so through English teaching programs.
And when you came here, was your goal to stay long term? Was your short term goal just to teach English for a while and gain experience?
I kind of wanted to hang around for a couple of years and see what life was like and then potentially go on to a different country. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was kind of looking to find what I wanted to do. And I think I was lucky that I found it in Japan. I found that I enjoyed the unique challenges that Japanese language and Japanese culture presents. And I liked living here. I made a lot of good friends. After the first 2 years, I met my wife. And there were a lot of reasons to stay, and I really enjoyed it. And so in that process of getting to know Japan, I kind of started to think about what I'd want to do long term and in the future. And that's how I ended up with a lot of future goals that relate to cooking, which is what I'm doing now.
Is this a passion of yours that you've had for a long time, cooking?
I've always liked to cook. My mother had a catering business. My aunt is a fantastic, like almost a chef level amateur cook. And so there are a lot of people in my family that can make delicious stuff and really inspired me. But it wasn't until I got to Japan and had the chance to make things that I enjoyed eating and introduce them to people who had never had those things before. And I found that I liked, you know, making food for my friends, making foods for my coworkers, and having it be a new experience for them and something that they really enjoyed. And I'm sure just being in Japan for the time that you've been, you've noticed like the appearance of food is extremely important to Japanese people.
Right, right.
It's a big part of the culture that you enjoy the food with your eyes almost as much as you do with your mouth.
Right.
And so there's a really big emphasis on not only making food that tastes good, but making food that looks on a professional level, very, very appealing. And so that was another thing that I found challenging, and I got into what could I do to make my food more professional. And the more time I spent doing it, the more I realized I really enjoyed it. It was something that, you know, I could spend hours and hours and hours in the kitchen trying to find the right way to cut a cucumber or to present a dish, and I wouldn't get tired of it. And I started to think, I could really do this as a job. I could do this for the rest of my life.
So when you had that realization, what was your plan to bring that to reality?
Well,
because at the time you were teaching English, right?
I was. I taught English for 2 years with the JET program and then almost a year with a private ALT company. But I guess when I had that realization that I wanted to do cooking, I thought I'd like to have my own restaurant and I'd like to publish cookbooks. And if possible, you know, I'd like to introduce some of my cooking on TV or in magazines. I think like most foreigners who come to Japan, when I first got here, I kind of in the back of my mind had that mistaken impression that it was easy to get work like foreigners can model or foreigners can be guests on TV shows or have small roles as actors. I think every foreigner kind of has that idea in the back of their head. But for me personally, once I got here and realized, you know, I'm in a small town, there aren't really that many opportunities to do things like that.
You started with YouTube, right?
Yeah, I started just doing YouTube videos. I thought, you know, if I want to get on Japanese TV or if I want to get a job with a magazine or something like that, I can't just walk into a TV studio and say, "Hi, I'm Bobby. I like to cook. Can I have a job, please?" Right. You have to have something that you can show somebody. And so I started a cooking blog, all in Japanese, and I started doing YouTube videos. And I would introduce various recipes, you know, simple things like chili or like cheesecake or things like that. But I would do it in Japanese. Hmm. And the goal was, you know, to have a portfolio that I'd be able to show someone, to say, this is my Japanese ability and this is my cooking ability. And if you're interested, this is the kind of thing that I could offer to you.
Right.
And at the same time as I was building that portfolio, I started to think about other things that I would need to get into that line of work. And for someone with no connections, I mean, you really can't expect to walk down the street and someone to approach you and say, do you want to work in the media? You need representation.
Right.
And so Saga is a very small town. There's no talent agencies in Saga. Fukuoka is the closest major city. And so I started applying to talent agencies and modeling agencies in Fukuoka, which was a bit of a learning experience. You really can't just expect to walk in and say, I'm a foreigner, hire me. They evaluate you in terms of, you know, whether or not they think you'll be able to find work. And so for me, my goal, my focus was cooking. So when I went for an interview at a talent agency and said, I want to cook, I want to cook, I want to cook, it didn't really leave a good impression on them. Their interest in you is what they can do to sell you.
Right.
And there's not a really large market for A, foreigners, and B, you know,
cooks. Shows. Right.
Yeah.
But you did get into modeling, right?
Eventually, yeah. That's right. I kind of had to, you know, allow myself to say, okay, I might not be able to get right into doing the cooking shows and things like that. I have to reevaluate and say, what do they want me for? And once I get my foot in the door, then maybe down the line, I can go back to focusing on what I want to do. Hmm. And so second or third talent agency that I went to interview at, I kind of kept my mouth shut about the cooking, and they said, what kind of stuff would you do? And I said, you know, I do whatever kind of modeling you think I'd be good for, which was mostly like bridal fashion shows.
Okay.
And, you know, the occasional commercial. I played a foreign businessman in like a coffee commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Or like a foreign reporter in an electronics store commercial.
All right.
And I did a lot of photo shoots for wedding chapels or bridal salons. And after I had done some work for the agency and gotten to a place where I felt more comfortable, you know, telling them this is the direction I want to go in, then I started showing them my cooking portfolio and saying, you know, couldn't you ask around to some magazines and see if anybody's interested in like a cooking column? Mm-hmm. And someone was. And lasted for about 8 months. It was a cooking column in a magazine called Fukuoka Walker. And they had been putting together a project where they were going to use children's cooking toys to try to make other things. You know, like they sell like donut makers or muffin makers, or
right.
Have a little kid's toy that you can use to make roll cake, like the Hello Kitty roll cake bakery set.
Right.
They said, you know, what could you use to make food that adults would be interested in?
Right.
And so we did 8 months of, you know, I'd use these kids' toys to make some kind of interesting food.
Wow, really?
And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And that got an audience. And so they actually let me link my blog and my YouTube. Every time they put out a new issue, it would have a little, my address would be written at the bottom. And so that brought in more YouTube viewers. And someone from the local Saga TV station saw that column and followed it to my homepage and sent me a mail and said, would you like to come on to be a guest cook on our show? And that was, they asked me to come on just one time only, and they wanted to kind of see what I could do on live TV before offering me anything else. And I think they didn't expect that I would be able to speak Japanese. They didn't expect that I'd really be able to kind of like participate in the live broadcast. And then when I could, you know, they didn't have to just explain what I was doing. I could explain it myself, or I could participate in the conversation. They started to think, okay, well, this is a guy who we could use more than once. And they asked me to do some gourmet reporting. They asked me to do some interviews and things that were related to English. And from there, it just grew and grew and grew. And eventually I said, you know, I'd like to do a cooking segment on the show. This is my idea. What do you think? And they liked it. So I got a cooking segment on that show and did that for about a year. And then other shows in larger cities and areas started to notice and contacted me as well. And now that's what I do full time. After about a year of doing it part time, I was able to leave the English teaching jobs. And that's where I'm at full time now.
That must have been an exciting day for you, the day you were able to quit your English teaching job, eh? And go full time into being on TV and doing what you want to do.
It was exciting, but a little sad as well. English teaching is a great job as a part-time job in Japan. Let me rephrase that. English teaching is a great job as a short-term job in Japan. If you're an ALT, if you're an English teacher, it's good money. It's rewarding, depending on the students that you have and the schools that you work at. I worked at a very good school. I had great students, and I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. But unless you are really dedicated to education, there's no future in it, really. I mean, I've heard horror stories from people who, you know, they've been here for 20, 30, 35 years, and you start as an ALT and you end as an ALT.
Right.
There's no room for advancement. And if you want to start a family in Japan and kind of have a career in Japan, you can do it as an ALT, but it wasn't something that I was interested in.
Right.
So it was sad to leave the relationships that I had made and some of the kids that I had really great lessons with. But at the same time, I think the most exciting for me was when I was able to look back and say, it's been a full year since I left English teaching. It's been a year since I gave anybody a sticker for anything.
Right.
And yet I'm still in Japan and able to support myself, and I'm doing something that I really love, that I'm really, you know, happy to get up and do every day.
Right. How important do you think was it, your YouTube channel, and getting you the exposure that you needed?
Extremely important. Like I said, number one, it's a portfolio. It's something concrete that you can take to someone and say, this is what I can do. And number two, you'd be surprised at you know, how much attention it gets. Even before I got the local jobs, I got a couple emails from TV stations in Tokyo that said, oh, we noticed you did this video about cooking with natto. And we were curious about, you know, why you decided to do that, and you know, if you had any other ideas, you think you might be able to work on this project with us. People really do watch.
What was it like for you going on live TV and having to speak Japanese on live TV?
You know, having done it a number of times now, one of the shows that I work with, it's all live. And even the cooking segment, you know, you've got 5 to 10 minutes to cook something from start to finish. You get to switch out pots and pans in between, but it's all live. And what they say in Japanese is bata bata. It means you're kind of like panicking and running around.
Right.
And I find it's actually easier for me sometimes to do the live shows than the pre-recorded shows, because to use another Japanese expression, there's a word called yoyu, which kind of means like your composure, your mental room to maneuver. And for me, if I have too much yoyu, if I have too much mental room to maneuver, I think too much. And I will start one sentence and it won't end in the right place because I'll switch over in the meantime. If I'm in that, you know, survival, this is live TV, kind of half panicked, half nervous mode,
right,
there's no room to think too much.
Right, right.
And so it really focuses you on what I have to present, what I have to do, what I have to say. And there's an element where, like, you don't have time to overthink, so it's a little bit more natural. If someone jumps in and makes a joke, if I had too much time, I'd overthink an answer. Whereas it's live, it's in the moment, you have to respond right then. And I think I'm lucky in that so far I've been able to respond without totally screwing up and even occasionally say something that they thought was funny as well.
What have you learned about Japanese cooking from doing your shows?
I mentioned it earlier, but that the most important thing is the way it looks. I think they're big on colorful dishes, and they say you need basically four colors. You need white, green, red, yellow, and black. And if you have those four colors in your dish, then it's the most visually appealing. You get your white in rice a lot, your greens from vegetables, blacks from black sesame seeds or seaweed, and then yellow from egg or vegetables. But those, like I said, it's the appearance of the food that's the first impression. And that's what a lot of people tend to decide on. Of course, you know, if it looks really beautiful, but it tastes terrible, it's not going to be a successful dish. But I think food culture in Japan is extremely focused on appearance.
Has your kind of taste in food changed since you've been here?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, I think I ate a wide range of things when I still lived in America. I ate a lot of Japanese food. I ate a lot of Thai food, Korean food, Chinese food, Greek food. The thing I love about America, especially compared to Japan, is you can get your hands on any kind of cuisine.
Yeah.
Japan, they still don't eat that much foreign food. I think Chinese, Korean, and Indian are probably the most popular. But
yeah, I miss being able to buy cheese and decent bread and stuff like that.
Cheese and bread, right? Those are the big ones, right? But there was something I was going to say. What was the most recent question?
What did you?
Oh, my taste. Have my taste changed?
Yeah.
So I don't think my tastes have changed in terms of now I like to eat Japanese food. I think maybe my palate has mellowed a little bit because Japanese food is well known for being more subtle in terms of flavor. Japanese people tend to enjoy simple flavors. And as a foreigner, I think you imagine like shoyu is very strong. Soy sauce has a very strong flavor, or like wasabi is very spicy. But for real Japanese cuisine, they place more importance on, you know, the flavor of the food item itself. If it's, you know, a piece of vegetable, if it's a piece of meat, they really want to do whatever they can to bring out the essential flavor of that. And they don't want to over season it. Whereas, you know, back in America, we put sauce on everything. We put dressing on everything. We put ketchup on everything. We salt the shit out of everything. And here, I think I notice it more when I go home to visit and, you know, I go out to eat and, you know, they've got so many fresh ingredients in the salad and then they just smother it in blue cheese and all you taste is the blue cheese.
Right.
So I think my palate has mellowed since I've come to Japan.
Wow, that's interesting. What's your future plans for your cooking shows?
Well, actually, my wife and I, we're planning a world trip. It's one of the things that, you know, we talked about since we met and since we decided that we were going to get married. We wanted to kind of take a around the world honeymoon. And it's been a year and 4 months since we got married now, but we finally saved up the money to do it. So in April, we're going to leave Japan for about a year. And most of the cooking shows I'm going to have to kind of take a break from, and hopefully we'll be able to pick up when I get back. But we're talking to some some TV stations about the possibility of doing some kind of like small project, kind of like video letters from Bobby.
Right.
Where I can still continue to introduce food or show them the cooking that I'm doing in other countries.
Right.
And I'm working with an outdoor magazine, a Japanese outdoor magazine, to try to develop a column that I can do while I'm on the road.
Right.
And then, of course, while we're traveling, I'm still going to continue making YouTube videos and posting recipes to my blog. And, you know, just like how I was able to start from the beginning using the internet, katsudo, internet activities to link to media work in Japan. I'm hoping that when we get back from our trip, we'll have built up enough of a YouTube audience, built up enough blog followers to be able to take that to publishing companies or TV producers and say, now we have this material to work with. What can we make out of that?
Awesome. Well, if people want to find out more about your travels, where can they find you online?
Our world trip blog is bobbyjudo.com. We're already kind of updating it with some of the preparations and things that we're doing with what our day-to-day life is like over here when we take little trips in Japan. We put those up as well. And also my YouTube channel, Bobby Judo. Is the channel name, easy to find. And we put up cooking videos, travel videos, and kind of Japanese cultural exchange videos.
Actually, yeah, let me ask you about that because, you know, you said that learning the culture is very important. And you have this new series on your YouTube channel called One Beer?
It's called One Beer with Bobby. In Japanese, Bobby to One Beer.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's... Well, like I said, YouTube, when I started out, was primarily cooking-focused. And those videos always get a decent number of views. But along the way, I started to get a lot of, you know, Japanese viewers asking me questions about what it's like to be American, what it's like to be a foreigner, and on top of that, what it's like to be a foreigner living in Japan. So I got the idea for a series where we kind of answer Japanese people's questions. Sometimes we just take the questions out of the comments. Sometimes we actually invite Japanese guests on, but we do it while drinking, which is much easier. You don't have to be embarrassed about stuff. You don't have to be overly formal, and it removes kind of like the stigma of asking embarrassing questions. So far, we've dealt with such topics as, you know, if a foreign person has blonde hair, does that also mean their body hair is blonde? Which is an issue that Asian people don't have, so they're very curious about.
How do you say, does the carpet match the drapes in Japanese?
We actually cover that in that video.
Did you really?
We did, yes. please check it out. But those kinds of topics, you know, that, you know, Japanese people might be embarrassed to ask, but they're curious about.
Right.
We've talked about, you know, gun ownership in the West. We've talked about, you know, what's the average age at which Westerners lose their virginity. And those videos, as I'm sure you can imagine, they get more views than cooking lessons.
Right.
And so that's kind of like you get to know the culture, you get to know your audience and find out what they want to see. And that lets you tailor your own goals and your own projects to fit that better.
Wow, that sounds really cool. And they can find all that on your YouTube channel. Do a search for Bobby Judo. And for your round the world trip, it's at bobbyjudo.com.
Yep.
Thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking to you and hearing about your story about making it in Japan.
Oh, thanks a lot. I really actually, I enjoy Tokyo Podcast. It's a really great project and it's cool to hear all the stories from different people and what they're doing over here.
Oh, thank you. And good luck on your round the world trip.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to thank both my guests for coming on the show today. If you're interested in finding out more about the antiques market here in Tokyo, visit Jacqueline's website at tokyojinja.com. If you're interested in following Bobby's travels and cooking adventures from around the world, visit his website at bobbyjudo.com. I should point out that his entire website is all in Japanese, but he's got some great photos, and you can also visit his YouTube channel by searching YouTube for Bobby Judo as well. Bobby also sent me an update that the cooking channel that the TV show that he worked for when he was in Japan has agreed to produce some of his videos from the world. So if you go on his YouTube channel, you'll be able to find his new videos titled Bobby's World Kitchen, all about his cooking adventures from around the world. If you are interested in winning the free steak rib dinner from Tony Roma's, don't forget, visit Expats Guide to Japan. They are expatsguide.jp. Send them an email and they will enter you in their contest. And as usual, I will post a link to all of these people's websites from my website at tokyopodcast.com. Don't forget that if you're interested in being on the show or you have a story idea, feel free to send me a message through Twitter at tokyopodcast.com or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/tokyopodcast. I've been posting photo updates of my life here in Japan on there as well. So check that out. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.